listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
In life, it really helps to have someone with experience in what you're attempting to do so that they can support you and share their experience and mentor you also. For today's fastest growing population segment, however, there is no one with experience for what this group is encountering. Women living past midlife are full of energy, creativity, ability, and experience. They're living longer than their predecessors, and they're finding ways to have a good life without the roadmap that we usually have had. How and what are they doing? I'm talking today with Thelma Reese and Barbara Fleischer about their report on the new senior woman. Welcome to Full Power Living. You're listening to the only show on international media that's dedicated to awakening the world to the power and importance of human emotions. And thank you for listening. Barbara Fleischer and Thelma Reese are authors of The New Senior Woman, Reinventing the Years Beyond Midlife. Now, Barbara Fleischer, you have a doctorate in education. You're a retired professor of education. Barbara's also the author of many journal articles. She's presented her research at national and international conferences and has made presentations and conducted workshops for and about women in their 60s and beyond. She's interviewed hundreds of women about their concerns as they face new challenges in this stage of their lives. Thelma Reese also has a doctorate in education. She's a retired professor of English and education. She created the Advisory Council for Hooked on Phonics and was its spokesperson in the 90s. In that role, and as director of the Mayor's Commission on Literacy for the City of Philadelphia, she appeared frequently on television and hosted a cable show in Philadelphia. Together, she and Barbara created and maintained the www.elderchicks.com blog. She writes the monthly family column for Right Side Wire, and she and Barbara appear weekly on the Armstrong Williams show on Sirius Radio as he plumbs the wisdom of their elder chicks. So here's your official welcome to Full Power Living, Barbara Fleischer and Thelma Reese. I'm glad to have you.
Thank you so much.
Very glad to be here.
So let me start by being transparent. I am an elder chick. I'm 72, and I must say that I prefer the term elder chick to the elderly. And I'm reluctant to focus on elderly at all because I personally feel like I'm just getting started. And I think that statement alone qualifies me to be an elder chick.
So, absolutely.
And
you're certainly not alone.
Tell us what elder chick really is all about.
Well, we started looking at people around us and realizing in our 70s that some people were doing this getting older very well and others were not. And still others look to be doing it well, but were sort of faking it. And having retired from teaching, at least formally teaching, I guess we're all always teaching each other, we decided to write a book, and our daughters all said to us, well, why don't you have a blog? And of course we said, what's a blog? And the idea of Elder Chicks was born, and it has really enabled us to reach and form a community of people who will never see each other, probably, but who are in touch and who regard each other as confidants sometimes, as people who can discuss things with them, be role models for each other.
And interestingly, when we first started this blog, some people told us, well, they thought it was a porn site, Elder Chicks. But actually, what our thoughts were is that we think of chicks as renewal. Chickens, eggs, these are renewal, and that's what we thought of this. Here we were at this stage in our lives, and it was time to renew. And in fact, a lot of the women that we interviewed, we found out, looked at this not as the end of the line, but as a fork in the road. What were they going to do now?
Yes.
And so Elder Chicks we think of as a rebirth.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. So as I got into and past retirement age, I have done a lot of thinking about the fact that when my grandparents were at that age, they seemed a lot older than I feel like I am, or that I see other people being in their 60s mm-hmm. or 70s and 80s. For example, I started this show when I was 60. Earlier this year, I went on a cruise and I went swimming with dolphins. I went on a series of zip lines over the jungle in Belize, mm. and I swam with a jaguar in Honduras.
Whoa!
So that's at age 72. That's not the behavior of women my age just two generations ago. So,
so true.
So talk about the differences between then and now.
Oh. Well, first of all, we like to say it's true that older women do we don't sit in rocking chairs, but we rock. And there's a big difference. There's a big difference. My own mother lived to be almost 97, and she was great, and she was with it. But, you know, she never even wore slacks. She still got dressed up to go on an airplane. And the world has changed so radically, and there are so many more of us. We are not only living longer, we're living better, many of us. But as Bobby likes to say, we realize that the science is up to our doctors. The art is up to us. There are a lot of things that we can do, whether we're physically up to them or not. If we can't swim with a jaguar, we might take a lot of pleasure in knowing that you do, Eileen.
And we can also swim in a pool.
Uh-huh.
Or walk in a pool.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or sit in a spa. So there are other things that we can do. And when we understand that we may have some limitations and changes that used to seem daunting, there are now so many more avenues to explore. I mean, on a bad day, frankly, I can go places through Google that my mother never could.
Right.
And another thing is, underlying all this is a difference in our expectations, between our expectations and the expectations, at mm-hmm. least of my mother, and I think most people's. They really thought their lives were now drawing to an end, and what they had to do was sit back and wait. They waited for children to visit, mm-hmm. maybe took care of the grandchildren now and then if it wasn't too involving. You know, when I say involving, I mean requiring of too much effort or energy. But the expectation was this was their final time. The expectation that we found of many women, and certainly of ourselves, and certainly sounds like you of yourself, is that now we're going to start on things that we couldn't do before because we didn't have the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
Yeah, and that change in expectation, I think, is what is one of the main things that make our lives different from our parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this length of life shows us that a lot has changed along the whole spectrum of living. It used to be that adolescence, which wasn't even considered a real period of living until early in the 20th century, you went from childhood to work. Then adolescence became noticed as a time to grow and also a time to wait. And that's changing from waiting when we see what adolescents are now involved in terms of using their ideas, starting companies even, being extremely active in ways they weren't. So that waiting period seems to be changing. And the waiting period that Bobby mentioned for us really doesn't exist. If we're able to do anything, we don't want to wait. We want to do things. We want to keep doing until we can't do anymore.
I also think that doing that helps to lengthen our lives and make it richer. And yes. We keep our brains active. We keep our bodies active. And allowing them to languish, they really kind of fall apart and weaken and deteriorate. But when you keep them active, both your brain and your body, more energy comes to you, more life, more interest, more of the good life does come.
Yeah. You know, there was one thing I wanted to share. Probably, I think I was in my early 40s, so it's close to 30 years ago. I was on a business trip, and I read in an airline magazine the idea of an age thermometer. And the author said that that most of us had our midlife age thermometer set at 40 because previously the life expectancy was around 80. But now, the author said, people could have the capacity to live to 120. And so 60 was middle age. And the author suggested that you reset your age thermometer, which I did. I reset it as 60 as middle age and just kept focusing on that. And it seems to be really powerful. And I read in your book, someone said that 80 is the new 60. So apparently we need to shift another 20 years so that 60 is middle age now.
And statistically, we will have to do that ultimately. That's very true. And it's very interesting that when we started this and we started talking to women in groups, at senior centers, individually, you know, we had conversations with over 200 women, and we found out what was on their minds, what are the issues they're concerned with. And so when we wrote our book proposal and had our table of contents to show to a literary agent, she was about the age that you were, Eileen, when you started this show. And when she read that, she called us right away and said, she was then 62 and said, these are exactly the questions that my friends and I talk about. So I'm going to get this published, which she did right away. But it is now very often that in our audiences we find younger and younger people because they are looking ahead and realizing they have maybe a third of active life ahead of them when they're in their 60s. And they want to plan, they want to find role models, they want to have ideas of what they're going to do.
And so whether we actually have known it or not, those of us who are in this age range now are the role models. I just want you to know that all through my life, I've felt like a person who had my foot in one foot in one world and one in another. You know, because there's been so much change, and this is sort of what it's like. Again, it's like you are this age, but there aren't any models, so you need to figure it out at the same time that you're modeling for someone younger different ways of doing it.
Exactly. In fact, at one of the places that we spoke, we usually have a really good Q&A session, a real discussion at the end. And someone said, well, you know, I'm not really doing anything for anybody. I haven't been volunteering and I'm feeling a little down, I suppose. And it occurred to me that to say to this person that whether you know it or not, you are at least being watched by younger people.
Absolutely.
Right. We are, whether we like it or not, role models, because we've never been so visible, meaning we older women, because there have never been so many. And so the whole population map has changed so. The graph has flattened out at the top. It no longer comes to a point because there's this huge layer of older people who are being seen, who are even being seen in commercials.
Right. Now, as I read The New Senior Woman, you have so many quotes from the women that you did interview or communicate with. It seemed to me that some people were having a really rough time and other people were absolutely sailing. And to some extent, this reflected how they'd been living their lives already. But I wanted you to share with us a story or two of people who reported that they were experiencing difficulty, that this time was hard for them.
Well, this was very interesting that people don't, you know, many people think of, oh, retirement, you're finished working now, it's just on easy street. And what we found was it was not on easy street. People were having lots of situations, and each of our chapters reflects that, there were a lot of issues they had to face, some of which they hadn't faced before. And it wasn't that things were easy. It was that they had these issues and how they faced them, how they dealt with them. And some, of course, we put in the stories of the ones who dealt with these very well, but they were very creative. And let's see.
I'll never forget what's her name. Is the
oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, it's not her name I'm trying to think of. It was the one on the West Coast. I think she's in Seattle or in California.
Oh, yes. Think of her name in a moment. But she.
Okay.
Yeah. Does it start
very,
with a P?
Very wonderful. She moved up to Clear Lake.
Clear Lake, that's right. Yeah.
From after a happy divorce. It didn't start out that way, but it became one. They're actually even friends now. And this is a woman who really has dealt with so many difficult things in her life and has absolutely accepted the fact that she can do things she never did before and has used this time, is using this time to truly enjoy it. To be very creative about her life, to travel in ways that she never was able to. She has no children. She used to regret that. She doesn't anymore. I think that's an enormous thing to reckon with and come out on the other side of and say, you know, I'm having a good life. I am watching people with children who aren't. Some aren't having a good life with the families that they really so desperately wanted. And I can, and having not had children doesn't define me at this stage of my life. I thought that was really revelatory for me. I have children. I have grandchildren, fortunately. We both do. And to think that this woman really can live her life so fully and so happily, it doesn't mean she doesn't have aches and pains, and it doesn't mean she isn't losing some things that she used to want to do or be able to do, but she has found new ways of being creative. She's always been an animal rescue person. This has been a theme of her whole life. And she has made it so important. She's founded all kinds of groups that do animal rescue, and statewide in California for that matter, so that people find new avenues that they never knew they could. One of the things, one of the people that we talk to is a great woman here in Philadelphia, and she lost her only son when he was 30, he had an aneurysm. They were very close. I said, how do you get through that? She said, well, I didn't for a long time. And then I realized it was an honor to have been his mother.
Uh-huh.
I thought, wow, what a way to think about this, to feel about it. I guess for the emotional pro, this should be a nugget, I think.
I think it's really lovely. You know, we're up to our first break. I'm talking today about the new senior woman, which is the fastest growing segment of our population today. And my guests are Barbara Fleischer and Thelma Reese. We're looking at retiring, downsizing, and intergenerational relating when we return here on Full Power Living.
Thank you.
Everybody feels anger. But if you don't learn to deal with it, anger can mess up your life. It can cause you relationship problems, difficulties on the job, or create health problems. If you want a way to understand and work with anger that's simple yet so powerful it helps you to put an end to the specific angers that are messing up your life, then you'll want to get a copy of a mini course I've created for you entitled Reduce Anger Now. With it, I want you to be able to figure out what's stimulating the anger you feel and have an easy way to change that anger so you can dramatically reduce the anger in your life. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, longtime psychotherapist, coach, and anger expert. I've helped thousands of people to master anger, and I want you to begin to become an anger master in your life. Order Reduce Anger Now at the store, www.emotionalpro.com. That's www.emotionalpro.com. All right, welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Next week on Full Power Living, I'm talking with Paula Rosenfeld about the Oneness Blessing. It's called Diksha. This blessing can create neurobiological changes that open the heart, quiet the chattering mind, and allows you to be fully alive. It's a great way to start your 4th of July weekend, so be sure to listen and participate next Thursday. Also, please register at emotionalpro.com, to receive our twice weekly newsletter through which we keep you up to date on the shows and topics we have for you here on Full Power Living. And while you're there, click on the CCFL Global Academy logo to find out what it is that I'm doing to help families and children smoothly go through this transformation that is currently in progress on our earth. So that's at emotionalpro.com through the Academy. It's a membership site that offers you all of these perks, and I'm an expert there on mastering emotions and ending codependence. Please come and build community with us and help to shape the world's future by the way we prepare our children for adult living. That's Global Academy, CCFL Global Academy on emotionalpro.com. So my guests today are Barbara Fleischer, who's a retired professor of education and an author, and Thelma Rees, a retired professor of English and education. One of the things that interested me is how people were reacting to the changes in their lives, which you talk about, you know, the loss or being alone or downsizing the home. And I realized that I married when I was 19. My marriage ended when I was 30 after I'd had a child, and it was a devastating experience for me. It took me a couple of years to recover, but I had a wonderful therapist who taught me about the identity crisis process. It's a process you go through when you have major loss. And it struck me that many of the people you talked with, let's say they got married when they were young, but they stayed married for 50 or 60 years and then faced what I faced at age 30. It has got to be devastating. People were going through some really devastating things. Is that not so?
The gray tsunami?
Yeah.
Have you heard that term?
I have. I read it in your book, I think.
Ah. The people who stayed together through thick and thin for the sake of the children, et cetera, and then became liberated. This was difficult for many women. And we found in talking to women that around the 60s, when they began to sort of re-look at themselves, and realized that there was more to life than they had bargained for when they first got married. And in many marriages, their husbands went along with this. They grew with them. Many husbands felt threatened by the new attitudes of their wives, and the marriage didn't make it. I mean, I don't know about yours, but this certainly happened in many. And then they had to set out and make new lives for themselves.
It takes enormous courage, and it has taken enormous courage for many people who were in marriages to face the fact that they were growing alone within a marriage, and the marriage didn't survive, or in the case of happy marriages, of good marriages, the loss of the partner is such a terrible blow. Some people say they don't recover, but do. They really do if they allow themselves to continue to grow. All loss is difficult, not just the loss of a partner, although there's a very good book that we quote from in there called The Loss of a Partner by Carolyn Walcher. There's a lot of good information about this. She's a professor who has survived such a loss herself and had a subsequent good life, but it was certainly traumatic. She was young and with children, and this has happened to many people. There are all kinds of loss in life, and you don't get to be old. There's no way you get to be old without loss.
Mm-hmm.
So the interesting thing is that science is even discovering that as we go through these traumas, we actually get stronger.
Wow.
And we can draw on strength that we didn't know we had. I mean, we're actually, there's stuff in our brains that's even getting stronger. Wow. So there is some good news. There is therapy, as you say, you had when you were young. At any time, it's very valuable for many people. It's so valuable to be a woman, because as a woman, just the fact that you are an older woman means that you have the power to communicate with other women, as very few men do. Women are able, within 15 minutes, to have intimate conversations with each other. That's very rare among men.
And in fact, we found in writing this book with our interviews that we didn't have set questions that we asked.
Right.
We would sit down, say hello, pour a cup of coffee, whatever it was, and the conversation would start. And without our having an agenda, the women would tell us. And they say, oh, we feel like we have a new friend.
that's really good.
True, men don't do that.
we started our interviews of men for our next book, and it's a different kettle of fish.
Oh, that's very interesting. Well, you must come back and when you get that one done. One of you made a comment a while ago, which I'd like to look at for a moment. I've been a psychotherapist for 43 years, and probably in the last 25 years, I have followed this notion that our Earth is a giant school, and we all come here in order to learn and grow.
Oh,
and the comment you said was, if we allow ourselves to continue to grow. That seemed to be a secret of many of the people who were doing well through this time period.
Absolutely.
Because what we found, the women that we thought, well, they're not doing it right. Not that we're judgmental. But we want to be like them.
We are women.
Right. That they ask certain questions of themselves, and they were not self-absorbed. Oh, sure, they were reflective. I mean, I think one has to be reflective about oneself. But they looked outside themselves for stimulation,
right,
for friend. They were open. They were open to new ideas. They didn't say, oh, things are so bad now. We were so much better. Our children were better. And the kids today are no good. They're not those kind of people. They're people who are looking outward to see, well, what is it in this new world? I don't want to be an old fogey. I want to know what's going on.
And they connect with younger people.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You make a good point of that. When I was a young woman, my husband and I lived in Seattle on a houseboat, and the owners of the houseboat, the woman was a professor at the School of Social Welfare. And she was in her 40s. And I remember her telling me one time, the older I get, the more I want to hang out with young people. And I asked her why. And she said, well, because they focus me on the younger parts of myself.
Oh, very. Oh, I like that.
That's interesting. Yeah.
And I know that you have a whole discussion in your book about the fact that we need to stay connected with people younger than ourselves. Although I found it funny that at least one person said that they didn't think they could understand young people because they talk so differently.
Well, that's true. They do. So you say to them, what does that mean?
Exactly.
And they're happy to tell you. And they're happy that you're interested.
They really are. They really are. And it's great to connect with new life. I was just speaking last night at something that I helped to found here in Philadelphia, which is the Philadelphia Young Playwrights. And I looked around and I thought, this is so wonderful. I am getting used to being the oldest person there and a lot of things. But I realized, because they tell me that I'm of value because of that.
Right.
I absolutely have the history of the organization. And I'm looking at these young people who are carrying it far beyond where we thought it would go. It's just a beautiful thing to see happening. And to see happening to younger and younger people, and with all these ages in between who are mentoring them. And I think it's so wonderful to have done that, but it's even better to see where it's going. And that's how you see what a legacy is.
Yes.
Well, that's because you are genuinely interested in them and what they are saying.
That's
true. Do you remember, Thelma, that one of the people, I don't remember if we interviewed her together or at a workshop or whether I interviewed her separately, and she said, oh, she's so interested in being with young people. And she said, but they don't listen to what I tell them to do.
Right. Exactly.
Right. No, you're missing the whole point.
Or the one who I think is in the book, who said, I can't believe how my daughter looked when I picked her up at the airport. That woman, her daughter, that woman is a professional architect, and you should see how she dressed. And I it occurred to me to say, you didn't mention that to her, did you? And she said, well, of course I did. I'm her mother. And I thought, no wonder she doesn't visit often.
You have another story there where a mother comments on her daughter's appearance, and the daughter says, I'm 40 now, I can dress myself. And the woman turns and says, you're 40?
Right.
I like that.
Right.
I think that was Elena. And
I
Elena
think that she's wonderful. She is wonderful.
She's marvelous. And believe me, she's had enough terrible things, tragedies in her life to fill a book itself. And she's so marvelous. We gave her the very last words in the book. She said, while I can, I will. When I can't, I won't. But I'll be glad that I did what I could.
Yeah.
And right now, I've just been seeing on Facebook these stunning trays that she's making. She's discovering this whole thing that she can do that she didn't do before. She takes courses in astronomy and physics because she's very interested. She says the older she gets, the more she's connecting to worlds beyond this.
Wow, that's interesting.
There are such interesting people in the world.
That brought up a really interesting memory or thought for me. In 2008, I received a small inheritance, and I actually blew it all, taking my husband and myself on a two-month trip to Australia and New Zealand. We went on a cruise for a month and then went around Australia and New Zealand.
Mm.
And, you know, some people really question whether I should do that, but it was not long after that
My
husband became ill and he was unable to travel.
Yes, you have to
now,
go when you can.
Right, and now we sit around and reminisce and go, wasn't that a great trip?
Oh, weren't you smart to do it?
Yeah,
weren't you smart to do it, really? You can't, you just can't put these things off in case. And,
well,
you know,
that's one of the things that being this age pushes us to really think about, isn't it?
Exactly.
It is. It does. I mean, at any time in our lives, you know, it could be the last. But we do really have to think of that now. And so it's so important to do while you can.
Right.
And, you know, I think of that great title of the Julian Barnes novel, The Sense of an Ending.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the sense of an ending when you are, as I am in my 80s, then you're just not paying attention.
Mm, yes. Well, you know, as I was reading this, The New Senior Woman, it seemed to me that one of the things that we might want to look at is that people who had a difficult time being flexible seemed to me had a more difficult time dealing with their elder life, while people who embraced change and looked forward to the things that they wanted to do, as you've been mentioning, and they stayed involved in life, they had a much easier time as elders.
And they have to also accept, I don't know why that particularly makes me think of so many people really have such rich experience volunteering for all kinds of things that they didn't used to know that they'd be interested in. But we know a man who has been turned down. He has many skills. He's a brilliant retired doctor. And he's very upset because nobody wants him as a volunteer.
Well, what he does, because I just had this conversation the other night. He said, I have called all of these places and they don't call me back. So I said to him, why don't you call them back? You know, they're often staffed by volunteers. Messages don't get to the next person. You know, all sorts of things happen. Just call them back. And, oh, no, I called them once and told them that I, you know, and it's up to them to call me back. So I this is an old friend, and I said to him, you threatened them. Yes, of course I threatened them. I mean, he almost took pleasure in the fact that he was better probably than they. And I said, well, your arrogance turns them off, and I think that is very, very arrogant. And I said, and what is better? Now you have nothing to do and you wish you had something to do?
Yeah, people who want to volunteer don't necessarily bother to find out what is needed in order to volunteer. They want to go in. Often they're people who ran things when they were younger.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would.
Actually, they... the place you want to volunteer may not really need a new executive director. You have to keep that in mind.
Well, I really need to interrupt here just for a second on this one. I happen to be married to a retired doctor. And you know, your friend, one of the things I've really looked at as my husband has retired is how difficult it is for him to drop the roles that
he had
as a doctor. And doctors are not used to waiting on other people. They're used to having other people wait on them.
Right, true.
And so, again, we're back to flexibility. If we are going to be successful, then we need to shift and go, okay, so in this situation, I'm not a doctor. You know,
that's right, and I'm not the head of this thing, and I can be something else, and I can accept learning in something else, and offering what I've never offered before, perhaps. It is an opportunity for growth. Maybe if they have to look at it as sideways growth for a while.
Absolutely, and growth is being in the position of the underling.
Right.
I think you grow
exactly.
a great deal when you recognize what it's like not to be the one in charge all the time.
See, now that's where we're talking about the earth as a giant school can be helpful, because if you've lived for years as a doctor, then you're used to being authority, and you may mm-hmm. be a little bit out of balance in the humility department.
Right,
and,
to Chad.
And volunteering. And volunteering can help you to build humility. And my definition of humility is remembering that there's someone larger than myself.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There is always someone larger than ourselves.
And the people...
We can learn from them, and when we're learning from them, they're learning from us, too.
Yes.
And also, when the people who are smaller than ourselves often have attributes that are larger than ourselves.
Yes.
They have a great deal of humanity that we maybe just didn't even recognize or think was terribly important.
Right.
Or even, let's not say didn't think important. Let's say didn't even notice
mm-hmm.
because they were under us. And
right.
so I think we have a great deal to learn from people
yes.
who are under us.
We definitely do, and let's hope we all develop the flexibility to do that. We're up to our second break here. All of you who are listening, what could you do to let the elder chicks in your life know how much you value them? Consider letting them know as soon as you can. We're going to have more with Thelma Reese and Barbara Fleischer about the new senior woman when we return. Parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com. All right, welcome back to Full Power Living. Thelma and Barbara, there are people who do amazing things as elder chicks. One is developing a medical library, I think, in Cambodia or Vietnam.
Yes, Gail Kogan, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and another who's a nurse volunteered to help on a very intensive medical team. There is another woman in your book who ran a translation service in Los Angeles and supervised.
Still does.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And there are people who have started groups and programs and services to help teens and people who are less advantaged, and just amazing stories. Tell me, each of you, tell me your favorite story about what people are doing with, what women are doing with these years that they have.
Well, I have to say, I love the story of the woman who created Paragon Language Services, but we were determined when we wrote this book not to talk about famous people. We were looking for people who anyone might meet, and some of them, it's true, have these very outstanding accomplishments, but just as inspiring are people who nobody will ever hear of because they didn't start a business or anything. They're just living so well and with such intention to really live as a good a good friend, a good neighbor, a good grandmother, who do it reflectively, who are doing it very consciously, and they're not looking for any kind of accolades, and they're not necessarily getting them, but they have such inner strength. And that's what these other people are exemplifying too in their very real accomplishments. The woman I mentioned before, Blanche Burton Lyles in Philadelphia, has purchased the properties that were owned by her mentor, who was the great Marian Anderson, the great contralto.
Oh, right.
And Blanche herself has been a concert pianist and then a music teacher in the schools too, and still mentors young people, young opera singers, and leads an extraordinary life this way. She took care of her parents. She lost her son, as I said. But she leads a very rich life.
And the one that you mentioned, Gail, the one who started the medical library, she had been, her job, her career was a medical librarian in the United States. After she retired, she went on a trip to Cambodia. And while she was there, she thought, well, she's going to visit a hospital, a medical school, and sort of see what's going on there. And what she realized was that their library was woefully out of date. And she thought, I can do things for this library. And when she went home, first of all, she had to learn how to use a computer, to computerize a library. She hadn't done that before. This was quite a while ago. So she did, and she wrote to places and said, letters saying that they needed materials and, all of that. At this point, it's more computerized, I think. But then they had to actually physically get the materials and send them there. But she did all this. That didn't require money. She wasn't a wealthy person or anything like that. It required work, and she did it. She found out who she had a right to, and of course she knew because it was her career. But she has set up this library, and, I visited her. They are so grateful. They have sent her beautiful things, as thank yous, and it's an ongoing process. Mm. Now, other people are involved. The problem was, because it was Cambodia, I think most of the
French
materials had to be in French.
Yeah.
And part of the legacy or the requirement when this medical school or hospital were formed was that French be maintained. But the students wanted English. I mean, they spoke French, but they knew that so much of the best literature that they needed, they weren't so much books as periodicals, were in English. And so she had to get them all to donate, these places to donate their materials. And she's done it, and it's ongoing, and it was just a beautiful thing to see about.
Yeah, that's really great. What you're describing there is that those particular elder chicks, they found ways to have a sense of purpose. But I think that developing a new sense or a renewed sense of purpose is really key. Because when we raise our children, we focus on them. When we have a partner or spouse, we have someone we can do things with. When we have our career, we have an identity. But when our kids grow up and our spouse dies and we retire, we have the job of finding out who we are separate from all of those identities.
Exactly.
That's a big issue, isn't it?
It's a huge issue. And you need to find what we say is a reason to feel good about yourself when you go to sleep at night. Something that makes you understand that you have value, you have things to do that mean something, and meaning something doesn't necessarily mean that you're getting some kind of praise from outside. It's finding something that is satisfying your own inner need to do.
Yes. And that's a part of that identity crisis that I was talking about. Sometimes, what I learned is it takes somewhere between 6 months and 2 years to do that. And it's not at all easy. Many days you feel like just going in and crawling in bed and covering your head under the covers, you know.
And once in a while, I really think that once in a great while, it's okay to do that.
Well, I've done it.
I've done it.
But it's not your whole life.
Exactly.
Yeah, and what happens often when that does become your life is you become very self-absorbed in illnesses develop or get magnified or, you know, where you used to pull yourself together and get to work or send the kids off to school or, you know, whatever it is that you did. It had to be done because other people were depending on you.
Exactly. It does take particular strength when somebody else isn't saying, you have to be here, when you have to start setting your own deadlines and making your own goals.
Right.
Yes.
I think that's the advantage. I've been self-employed for 43 years. I have an advantage in that department because
I've been doing it. And you can get this from volunteer work, too. Some people, one of the reasons that some people don't like volunteers is because they come in sometimes, they don't come in other times. I know where I happen to volunteer now, everybody there looks at it as though it's a job. They have to be there. They said they'd be there, and they have to be there. If they can't be there, they have to find somebody to replace them. So it's easier to just go in if you can.
And that's why
it's good a matter of attitude,
for us to write together also, because when we write, we have to send things to each other. So for me, I know I work better with a partner. My husband works better alone. You have to know your own style, too, and what works for you.
Well, sad to say, we're coming up close to the end of the show. So,
my goodness.
It's been delightful, hasn't it?
It has.
I want to know from each of you, what are the most powerful conclusions you've drawn from this investigation that would allow you to give advice to this age group who are listening to the show?
We found that there were certain threads that run through. It's not so much advice as what did we find sort of cut across these women who seemed to be doing so well. I had already mentioned that they don't see this as the end of the line for themselves. They see this as an opportunity, what I call a fork in the road, for them to see, okay, I have, and if they really look, they say, I have another third or a quarter of my life left to live. I spent a lot of time getting ready to be an adult. I spent a lot of time being an adult. But how much time did I spend preparing for this last third or quarter of my life? And the chances are not much. So preparation, I think, is important. Asking, what can I do that has purpose and meaning? You know, this business of being very proactive about volunteering, but in the way that we also talked about. You can't just be arrogant and say, I've done this and now I can do this for you. But another thing that I feel is that they are not mourning the loss of their youth. A lot of women are. Oh, they're getting old. Look at their bodies. Look at their faces. Look at all this. This looks so big. I mean, we all look at it and say that, you know. We aren't as pretty as we used to be, whether we were or we weren't. But they don't do that. This is it. This is what I am. And onward.
Right.
They're not mourning that loss.
I think that's absolutely true, that you don't look back in a way that says you want to ever be there again.
Mm-hmm.
You value the experiences that you've had, that you've gone through whatever you've gone through and come out on this side of it all and handled things that you never would have dreamed that you could, and that you recognize that this gives you a strength that is what you need. So even if you're only looking forward to much less than a quarter of your life, you can make it all count.
I did a whole month on the topic of aging a few years ago on this show, and I learned from that most people who are really, really engaged in their lives stay healthy and move forward until perhaps somewhere close to the last 2 years, whereas
right.
people who are not doing that slowly get sicker and sicker. And granted, there are those of us who have accidents and hereditary illnesses, and I don't want to shortchange that. But
right.
but the whole idea is that we really need to stay engaged, you know, kind of the
yes.
way I was looking at it is, well, as long as I'm here on the earth, let me be as alive as I can be.
Exactly. Absolutely. This is a gift. This extra
right.
time is a gift. And I think we can look at it, the older we get, the more we can see it as extra time.
Oh, great. Well, I want to remind people that the name of your book is The New Senior Woman, that your blog can be found at elderchicks.com. And I want you both to know that I learned so much from reading your book and the words of women who are facing the challenge of being someone they have never experienced before, but they're challenged to be now, and for your own selves in being a new senior woman too. So I just want to say thank you for identifying the issue, for approaching it so openly, for offering support to those with whom you talked and communicated. And then I want to thank them for sharing it all with the world through your book, The New Senior Woman.
Thank you very much.
All
it's
right.
been a pleasure.
Great. Next week, listen to Full Power Living when I talk with Paula Rosenfeld about a powerful way to open and change through receiving Diksha, the oneness blessing. Listen next Thursday, July 2nd at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern. And thank you for listening to Full Power Living. I've been my own producer today, but Paul Johnson, our regular producer who unfortunately could not be here today, really set me up to do a good job. So, Paul, thank you again. And for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
To Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.